worlds collide. Written in the stars is a message of doom for this, our world. And now in the most shattering experience the screen has ever given you, Paramount tells what could happen within your lifetime when worlds collide. An astronomer checks and double-checks his horrifying discovery. A distant star racing through space toward an inevitable collision with this planet. The United Nations meet in emergency session. All conflicts pale before this threat from another world.
If you wait until the danger is visible to the naked eye, it will be too late to escape.
High on a mountaintop, an army of scientists work desperately to build this giant rocket, this modern Noah's Ark to carry a few picked survivors of our doomed civilization to a new life on another world, reaching the heights of self-sacrifice, the depths of the animal lust for survival as they fight to be among the few who can be saved.
Let's take the ship away from them! Come on!
Fighting among themselves, fighting against time, as doomsday is upon them.
I think all you scientists are crackpots.
Nothing is going to happen.
When worlds collide, you'll see the most amazing, awe-inspiring scenes ever put on film. The forces of nature unleashed in all their terrifying force. Tremendous tidal waves smashing New York City. The molten fires from the bowels of the earth gushing out to consume our world.
Boy. Hello, fellow people of this space-time continuum, this universe, on November the 23rd, 2019. It is November the 21st, 2019. And that was a part of the trailer for the 1951 George Pal sci-fi classic in Technicolor, When Worlds Collide. When Worlds Collide. If you've ever seen the original movie version of H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, that is also George Pal. And so is Destination Moon. So he's had a couple sci-fi films. And George Pal is known for many things, but he's also known for a lot of stop-motion animation. Like, he did a lot of interesting stuff with stop-motion for special effects. And he inspired a lot of people who did special effects work later on. Arguably, even in the film Star Wars, you can see little bits and pieces of the George Pal magic. So yeah, that was the 1951 trailer, and today is not 1951, it is the year 2019. It is the year 2019, and the good news is, well, we're still here. It is the year 2019, and the Orca apocalypse did not occur. That's good news. I thought that would happen. I thought that 2019 would be the year of the Orca uprising. It is true, folks. I believe that in 2019, the orca whales under some great emperor or empress, probably an empress because aren't they kind of a matriarchy? Orca whale society, orca dolphin, orca porpoise. Are they a whale or are they a porpoise? They're a large toothed whale, right? Or are they a fucking porpoise? I don't know. I have had some biologists tell me that the orca is a porpoise, and I've had others tell me, no, it's just a large toothed whale, and I don't really give a shit, okay? A friend of mine had an idea. A friend of mine from St. Louis, a friend of mine we have heard from in the past, the voice is in my head like beans talking to me in the night. A friend of mine suggested that we create a hoax, a special kind of hoax. We convince the leaders, the rulers, the people who control us. We tell them that a planet named Morbos, it's only 5 days away. All senators and congressmen, all generals and admirals, all deep state operatives and neocon hookers, it's time for you to board the rocket ship for safety. You've received your text message, it's time to go. You have to pack your bag quickly, you should be ready to move with haste. It's only 5 days until Morbos hits the earth, you fucks. Until the planetoid Morbos. 5 days until the planetoid Morbos impacts the Earth and destroys it completely. Five days until the Earth is destroyed and all your hopes and dreams turn to dust. Five fucking days. All senators, all generals, all admirals, all colonels, all neocon fucks, everybody that wants and loves war, please board your rocket ship now. These rocket ships are at the SpaceX facility. You know the one that Elon Musk created? You're the same fucks that told us that Tesla was a good idea. Didn't you vote to make sure that Tesla got a little stimulus from Obama? Aren't you the guys that tell us that all the shit is real? Space is real. Elon Musk is real. Tesla's real. What the fuck was up with that fucking pickup, though? You guys see that fucking new pickup from Tesla, that truckazoid? What the fuck was that? Was that the family truckster that fucking Elon Musk debuted to the human race the other day? What the fuck was or is that boxy piece of shit that clearly has pretty cheap breakaway, you know, special effects glass windows? Which I would contend that in any type of situation, you don't want the cheesy special effects glass windows. No, you should spring for something a little nicer there, Elon. And yeah, the tires, they looked all fucked up. And frankly, I think you stole that fucking truck from the set of some fucking sci-fi movie. I don't even think your engineers built it. I'm waiting for some sci-fi movie geek to tell me that that is a missing prop from some fucking 1990s quasi-techno dystopian classic where people drive around in really boxy, ugly vehicles, because life is that fucking gray and tragic, and as they drive these horrible fucking vehicles, they drive over baby seals, and the baby seals actually cause the vehicle to crash. I'm telling you, folks, we need to spread a hoax. We need to tell all of the rulers that the Earth has 5 days until Morbos impacts us. And this is a great idea. And I don't take credit. My friend in St. Louis, my friend who works for the crocodile, my friend in St. Louis had this idea. It's fucking brilliant as fuck. Now, of course, I just gave it away. But really, government people are that fucking stupid. And actually, don't they tell us that? I mean, don't they literally tell us that even though they had every fucking red flag on every fucking hijacker before 9/11, we were too stupid to know. We were too stupid to protect ourselves. We had no idea what to do in situation like 9/11. So the government tells you they're morons, basically. If you believe any fragment of the 9/11 story, the only conclusion you can come to is that on 9/11, your government failed. Kind of like the banks in 2008. But isn't it funny, just like with the banks, the failure earned an A, or rather, the failure earned an award. For failing us, for the deep state and the government and the military failing us, if you believe the 9/11 story, for failing us, we have given them trillions upon trillions of dollars. We have funded them to their heart's fucking delight for fucking up. And then think about the banks. For nearly fucking wasting the entire fucking global economy, what did we do? Did we throw them in prison? Did we fucking, I don't know, hang them? A lot of them should have been fucking hung. There have been a few suicides since then. You know, people who've lost their lives, their entire fucking economic existence because of these motherfuckers. So yeah, I think a few of them deserved to die. In my humble opinion, they did. But no, what did they get? They got a giant fucking award. So I don't know if they're stupid or smart, but I do know they're crooked as fuck. Here's an idea. Tell them there's gold in the asteroid belts and the Earth is about to be destroyed. There's gold and diamonds and hookers and cocaine in the asteroid belt and the Earth is about to be destroyed. Please board your rocket ships, you admirals and generals and fucking crony deep state pieces of shit. Please board your fucking rocket ships, you CIA operatives, you fucking NSA analysts. Board your rocket ship designed by Elon Musk and take off for the asteroid belt and get your hookers and your cocaine, your whiskey and your gold. All your stolen booty is waiting for you in the asteroid belt. Like I said, folks, I cannot take full ownership of this idea. I suggested a friend of mine from St. Louis watch the movie, the George Powell classic, When Worlds Collide. And he watched the movie, and he came up with some ideas, and these were good fucking ideas. Great fucking ideas. Amazing ideas. The kinds of ideas that change the world in a day. He said, convince the kings, convince the queens and the bishops, convince all of the knights and every fucking pawn on the chessboard. Morgos is coming, or is it called Morbos? I don't know. The planet will destroy us. Load on to your spaceship. All you need to do, folks, is convince the bankers and the neocons and all of the fucking Council on Foreign fucking Relations, the Bilderbergers, convince them all that a planetoid will hit us, and they will load themselves, their fucking wretched, decrepit, decaying, evil souls, onto those fucking rocket ships. And keep in mind, those rocket ships were designed by Elon Musk, so we know what their final destination is. Yeah, it's the great pie in the sky, folks. It's the great golden BB. It's the great end of all ends. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Blast off. Indeed, folks, indeed. Next topic. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Humane, that is Hotel Alpha Mike, excuse me, Hotel Uniform Mike, Alpha November Echo, Humane. Did I say Humane? I hope I spelled it correctly using phonetics. Not even sure if they teach that shit to recruits anymore, to be honest with you. But yeah, Humane. Humane bottled water of Little Saigon. A lot of people will go to the grocery store and get themselves a nice crystal clear bottle of bottled water. And it'll say things on it like, this bottled water is Evian. This bottled water was bottled in Fuji. And I don't know, maybe it was. Maybe that bottled water was bottled in Fuji. But every bottle of Humane bottled water of Little Saigon, trademark and copyright controlled. Every bottle of Humane bottled water. Every bottle contains only one principal source. Did you know that there are 16.42 gallons of water in the average human being, that the average human being is mostly water? Did you know that? Did you know that every person needs a half a gallon of water each day, roughly speaking? One half. That doesn't necessarily include washing yourself or doing anything else with it. Did you know the human body contains about 1.5 gallons of blood? Well, that's about twice as much water as you need in a day. Maybe you can drink the blood, but here's the thing. At Humane Bottled Water of Little Saigon, they take the trouble out of your hands. Humane Bottled Water of Little Saigon was originally founded in Hungary in the year 1206. They were first wine growers and vintners. They had vineyards all across Hungary and Romania. Humane Bottled Water of Little Saigon was founded by Jorgis Kongo. Jorgis Kongo fled Hungary, he actually fled Romania under Ceausescu. Jorgis Kongo was considered one of the strangest people in Romania back in the day. It was rumored he was over 700 years old. But he is a really nice guy. And if you go in to Humane Bottled Water of Little Saigon and tell them Dan sent you, I'll get a special surprise. At Humane Bottled Water of Little Saigon, most of their process is protected by patents. Patents and patent trolls, as they say. But the basic process is a process of wine pressing, where you place the human gumbus, what's left of the human body, in a wine press. And before you say terrible, these are volunteers. How do we know they're volunteers? Because Jorgis Kongo tells us so. Why would he lie to us? Why would he tell us falsehoods? Just look into his hypno-beam eyes. Why would he lie to you? Yeah, the first step is pressing. You press the body until all of the liquids are removed. That's all the greases and the oils. All the various compounds and proteins. There's a lot of various proteins and greases and fats and oils that are extracted during the pressing process. And unlike unlike the contemporary wine presses, Jorgis Kongo uses an old-style stone press. An old-style stone press that has a pulverization weight of over 20 tons. That allows all of the greases and the oils and the gumbus to be extracted from the human body, the human bungus. Should we just call it the corpse? These corpses are volunteers, believe me, this is what we're told. Of course, you might recognize the faces if you saw them. But you're just drinking the water, buddy. The second step in the process is sterilization of the water. You have to purify it of the viruses and bacteria and all the terrible shit that will probably kill you within a day. The parasites, oh my God, you have no idea about the parasites on some of these people, these volunteers. The final step is artisanal filtration. Jorgis Kongo is very proud of his charcoal process. He creates his own charcoal. He actually has a wood-fired oven out back where he creates his own charcoal, and he runs the boiler for the distillation process and for the filtration. He creates his own charcoal filters from scratch using artisanal cotton fabric, and special glass vessels designed by a local glass blower. Isn't that fucking nice? So you can go to lots of places to get your fucking bottled water. And you can claim you're all green. Okay, Humane Bottled Water was voted the most green company of Seattle 25 years in a row. That's at least 15 years before they opened up. Listen, folks. That bottle of water, that comes from someplace special. It doesn't come from Fiji. It doesn't come from Evian, France. Who the fuck wants water from France now? It doesn't come from some fucking glacier. As if there are any fucking glaciers left. It doesn't come from some fucking spring. Nestle doesn't pump it out of Lake Michigan. This is the bottled water that comes from the human body, the human bungus. This is the bottled water that has its origin as the essential essences. And the other thing about humane bottled water of Little Saigon is that all of the oils, all of the greases, all of the organic compounds are preserved and conserved. All of the essences to be sold in the international district at little Chinese shops. Chinese shops where Chinese herbs are sold. Ancient powders. Ancient greases. Jesus killed himself. Now, I was not struck by lightning. Jesus committed suicide. Yeah. Let's break that one down, folks. The Lord Jesus died on the cross. He made a choice. In fact, at the Garden of Gethsemane, didn't he have questions? Didn't he say to himself, Lord, why must I do this? And what's really funny is if you understand the essential nature of the Trinity, Jesus Christ, the Holy Ghost and God, if you understand the essential nature of how those things are connected, then really, at the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus was talking to himself. He was talking to himself. He was asking himself, why are you making yourself do this? Why are you going to be tortured? Better yet, why are you going to be betrayed and tortured? And not just betrayed by one apostle, but also by at least two. Because wasn't there one apostle who denied his affiliation with Christ before the cock crowed three times or something like that? On the day of the crucifixion? So yeah, Jesus made a choice. He made a choice. The Lord in heaven made a choice to become a human being. And the Lord in heaven made a choice to die on the cross. And even though God doesn't die, God can't die, God never dies, the human body, on that day that was Christ, it did die. Now, it did rise up on the third day. But that still doesn't preclude the fact that on crucifixion day, Jesus Christ chose to die for our sins. That's also called martyrdom, you know, and it's also known as suicide. When you choose to kill yourself, I really don't care the reason. I don't. That is technically suicide. Now, of course, some of you are going to say, Dan, you're being heretical. You're preaching nonsense. I'm not saying that that's the way you should look at what happened to Christ. I'm saying that technically speaking, he took his own life. Now, also, technically speaking, God cannot commit suicide. It's not even feasible. There's no way to do it. But what God can do is be human, right? I mean, that was the mysterious, impossible thing. The Lord in heaven became a human being and lived among us and tried to teach us. That was impossible, wasn't it? So yeah, it was impossible. He became a human being. And no, God cannot commit suicide. But he did choose to kill himself. He did choose to die for our sins. On that day, at Golgotha. I talk about this because a lot of people these days are afraid to have the conversation about suicide. They're afraid to have it because they're afraid that if they talk about it, they'll be encouraging it. That's not how it works. In fact, it might be the opposite. If there is somebody in your life that is isolated and alone, that is hanging out there someplace, and you're assuming they're fine. They've got the internet. They've got pornography. They've got whatever they need. They got marijuana and beer. If you're assuming that these people are fine. Maybe you should check in on them. But if they happen to talk to you about suicide, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. I'm not saying, you know, you might not be afraid on the inside, but try not to show it. My advice is have the conversation. And at the end of the day, try to do your best to remind them that there are people in their lives that would be deeply sad if they went away. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. There are a lot of people in this life that I don't know personally, but based upon their track record, I don't know that I could possibly get sad if they killed themselves. Like, for example, Jeffrey Epstein. He was probably murdered. But if he did kill himself, which he didn't, but if he did, I don't have any remorse. I didn't know the guy. And from what I can tell, he was a real piece of shit. So I'm not going to tell you that every single person you know is redeemable. I'm not going to tell you that every single person you know is somebody that you're going to want to save. You might know somebody that's really fucking terrible and you wouldn't care. And I honestly can't do anything about that. What I'm talking about are the ordinary everyday schmucks, the ordinary people like you and I out there who are just trying to get by. If you know somebody right now in your life that is considering suicide, do your best to have a conversation. I don't have magical answers, folks. I don't. I have had to talk a couple people off the fucking cliff before, including once or twice myself. But in general, when it comes to talking people off the cliff, the first step is to listen. That person, it probably feels really alone. That person probably feels really isolated. And if they live in a upside-down wonderland like Seattle, surrounded by people on Prozac and delusion, yeah, if they live someplace like this, they're probably so isolated they don't believe anybody out there even gives a shit. So my advice is, if there's someone in your life that you care about but you haven't spoken to in a while, and they tell you, yeah, they're feeling pretty low, maybe they lost their job, maybe they lost their wife or their husband, maybe their girlfriend broke up with them, I don't fucking know, maybe it was the boyfriend. But if there's someone out there, man or woman, that you know and you care about, and they need to talk about the fact that they might want to kill themselves, have the courage to listen. It's not easy. I know a lot of you folks are happy, shiny optimists. And your basic theory is, I'm a happy, shiny optimist. If I let the darkness in, it'll never leave. But that's not how it works, folks. If you really are an optimist, if you really are one of these positive people, you should be able to listen to all kinds of crap and be okay. The Lord in heaven chose to be a human being. The Lord in heaven, our God, chose to be human, and then that same Lord died for us, per prophecy. That same Lord took all the sins of every human being on his shoulders, all the fucking sins. And here's the thing, I can imagine that he had to see it all, which means as a human, he had to see it all. It might have flashed before his eyes. You know how they say people's lives flash before their eyes, before they die? You know, maybe they see their kids. What if what Jesus saw before he died was every one of the sins, past, present, and future, that he was taking on his shoulders? Every single one. Every lie, every cheat, every thievery, every killing, every time we murder, every time we rape, every time we harm each other or harm the world and harm the creation we were given, every sin, past, present, and future, what if that all flashed before our Lord's eyes on the cross? When you think about it, that would be a burden even greater than the torture. That would be a burden even greater than anything else, to feel as a human being, not as God. God can see all of this, but if you as a human being chose as a human being to see all this, if you were God and chose to be man and to see every sin of every person that would ever be committed for all time, and probably see it in a few hours before you're being tortured and killed, I think that would be a burden. And then to say, you are forgiven. Something to imagine that somebody could see the worst in all of us. And really, it doesn't take much of a historian to recognize that the worst in all of us is pretty fucking terrible. It's something to imagine that someone could see the worst in every single one of us. All the things we're going to do that are so terrible, before we do them, really. Even though we have free will, wow. A lot of shit going on there. To see it all, and then say, you are forgiven. Now, I'm not naive, folks. I'm not going to be stupid. I don't know that every sin can be simply forgiven. I don't really know. But I am convinced that Christ saw them all. That God saw them all. That God saw every single one of them. And then when God chose to be a human being and took that burden on God's shoulders, he had to experience that as man. Imagine the PTSD. A double check time here. Sorry about that. I had to double check the time. Next topic. Oh, I need to move topics around again. Or maybe just delete one. Okay, I'm going to move a topic around here really quick because some of these, I'm not really ready for two of them. I need to do more work, more research. More study, folks, more research. You know, fuck. You know what they say about study and research, don't you? It amounts to nothing. It benefits no one. Next topic. Oh, come on. Oh. Enough of that bullshit. Next fucking topic. Winner takes all. Winner takes all. I do not believe that we have anything even remotely resembling functional capitalism in the world today. In order to have functional capitalism, you need a lot less lawyers, a lot less cops, a lot less government. And we have too much of all of the above. Too much regulation, too much control. What we have is a system of rackets. And I'm not the only one to describe it this way. You know, James Howard Kunstler has described it this way. Other people have described it this way. What we have is a system of interlocking criminal enterprises. That is the world economy. That is America. Yes, yes, yes. You could say there are little tiny pawns of quasi-capitalism, quasi-free enterprise. But it's surrounded by a lot of neo-Stalinism. A lot of picking winners and losers on the part of the Federal Reserve. In the current system, I can't call it capitalism. It's hard to call it anything. You could call it kleptocracy. I mean, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it really is the competition of organized criminals. Or maybe it really is an economy of bullies. An economy of people who are heavies, people who have force, people who have the power of really the gun, but not for defense, but for attack. These are the people that have a lot of power, and they get more power. And that's the whole point. Accrue more power. The person that dies with the most power wins, right? That is America right now. That is the world. The person that dies with the most power, the most control, the most stuff that they can say they have, they own. It's kind of like Trump wanting the USA to buy Greenland. What the fuck is up with that? Okay? I know that's kind of old news now, but that's pretty fucking crazy. Why the fuck do we need to own Greenland? Well, one reason might be because of Camp Century. I think it's Camp Century. Is it Camp Century where we have a lot of highly radioactive waste? Oh yeah, it's safe in the fucking ice. Oh, the ice is melting. Oh, but they tell us the ice isn't melting. Oh, but the Arctic will be open soon. Folks, you need to figure out what you fucking believe is true. But what I am telling you right now is that there is no good fucking reason to own Greenland. But I can tell you that in the world of power schemes and power pyramids and power egos, Greenland is huge. Greenland is gigantic. Winner takes all. We are in a zero-sum collapsing economy. We are in that type of competitive kleptocracy. We are in a really terrible global tontine club. We are. It's not Dr. Freckles' tontine club. That one's not so bad because it really doesn't threaten anyone. But the current tontine club is winner takes all. Scramble to the top. Find your little spot on the ledge as the waters rise. If your friends and family drown, well, okay. Oh, your husband lost their job. Find a better husband. Find a better wife. Find a better life. In the global tontine club, winner takes it all. But here's the thing, folks. In that kind of model of human economy that is all about, you know, being bullies and using violence to resolve conflicts and having lots of fucking lawyers, in that kind of a world, if you win it all, you're going to just go, all you will win, all you will have is a steaming pile of shit. That's it. That is the end of the riddle. The current economy that we have, our current economy, which in my view is not even remotely free enterprise, it is not free. But the current economy, this crony fucking neo-Stalinist bullshit, it does have a winner-takes-all component. And the problem is that by the time it's all over, there will be nothing left. It collapses upon itself. It is in fact, the historical equivalent of a tapeworm. That is our economy. It is a parasite that swallows everything and itself. The winner takes it all in America, but in the end, there might not be much left. Last topic. I've spoken about this a few times off and on in the autumn of 2017 for various reasons. In the fall of 2017, between the months of August and October, I kind of went a little bit crazy. I'm not proud of it. This is not a declaration of pride. This is merely a reflection upon me going a little crazy. I, at one point, said really nasty, terrible shit to people that didn't deserve it, and it's a good example of something that I may never be forgiven for, and truly, I'm okay with that. Because, you know what? Life, you're not always forgiven for shit you do, and sometimes it's just about getting out alive. in September and October of 2017, and I'm not proud of this, I did pretty much all the acid, LSD, I have ever done. Like, I did all the LSD I'd ever done. I'd done a little bit when I was in college. I did, like, a half a tab twice in 1991. And, yeah, it was interesting, but truly, I don't know. I wasn't that blown away, okay? Other than the fact that I stayed up all night and I talked to a goldfish for a while. And I don't think I'm the first person to ever have done that. And then in September of 2017, because, hey, they test for marijuana, but they can't pick up the LSD without a spinal tap. Yeah, actually, after a couple days, the hard drugs get out of your system and your urine, pretty much. In fact, after a couple days, if you can be disciplined, all the nasty hard stuff is gone from your urine. But the marijuana, which isn't really very hard at all, well, that's what gets you, yeah, you don't get the job. So I was interviewing for a job, and I thought, well, fuck, I'm feeling stressed out. Why don't I do some LSD? And I was 47 years old, folks. How fucked up is that? And so I did a whole lot. Like, I would say I did a sheet in about 2 weeks. And here's the thing about LSD. You can't do it 2 days in a row. I mean, you can, but the second day it will do nothing. It will do nothing until it clears out of your system. So you can't do it 2 days in a row. I learned that lesson. And even if you can do it every other day, you probably shouldn't. It's kind of another lesson I learned. And finally, there's a reason why the CIA loves LSD. I learned that lesson indubitably. It is the ultimate fuck with you drug. It is the ultimate drug designed to screw with you. It is the ultimate drug designed to basically shred your soul and to put you in a place of bleakness you cannot fucking imagine. Yeah, I guess there are people that have good trips on LSD. There were a number of nights in September, and actually I would say technically late September, early October 2017, where I stood, you know, with just jeans and a t-shirt. These were not necessarily balmy, but these were humid, late summer, Indian summer nights. Warm enough, right? Warm enough when you're hopped up on a couple tabs of LSD. I stood on Wyoming Street, and so you know, I rented a place with somebody, and it was in a questionable part of town. Let me put it this way. It was in the part of town where you don't tear down the cables from the multiple satellite installs before you do the whitewash paint job. Which means that you look at the fucking cables, like, it looked like at one point this house I was staying at had like a dozen satellite TVs. I'm thinking, you know, I can see you having one. But why would you need a dozen dishes? Anyways, I don't want to go into that. But when you paint over it, there's something dark and ugly about that. Plus, this was a house where it looked like, you know, something really bad happened. Like a murder-suicide. Like, somebody was taken out in the bathtub because you can see where the buckshot tore at the paint on the iron tub itself and created a little blast pattern. And then there was this pinkish spot in the room I slept in that looked like the pattern of a shot that basically would result from a person blowing their brains out vertically, so you have the brain splatter on the ceiling. Of course, they painted over that too. That's always nice. You can just paint over it, folks. I remember standing on Wyoming Street in Dayton, Ohio, in autumn of 2017 on LSD, staring at the street. And I'll tell you something. This is what I saw. I saw pimps chasing their hookers up the street with dogs on chains. Now, the actual thing that happened probably wasn't quite that crazy. But on LSD, it seemed that crazy. I saw a pimp with mean-ass fucking Rottweilers on chains chasing his hookers up the street. That was Wyoming Street in Dayton, Ohio. I saw gangbangers and street thugs. I saw sewer raccoons and weird rats with green glowing eyes. I talked to the night and the night spoke back. And the night told me that I was gonna have a heart attack. I am not advocating drug use, okay? I will admit, I am a drug user. Let me tell you the drugs I have used and I intend to use. I have used caffeine. I am currently drinking coffee. It's not very good coffee. I'm on a budget. I have used caffeine. I have used sugar. And guess what? Even salt can be a kind of drug. I've used that one too. I've used alcohol. Yes, I've had a few beers in my time. I've smoked cigarettes. I'm even thinking about learning to smoke cigarettes again. Yeah, it takes a few weeks for me to get back into the fucking fever of it. I love my nicotine in the morning with my fucking coffee. I loved it with my bacon and my fucking eggs. I love my fucking nicotine on a plane or on a train. I love my fucking cigarettes if I was in Spain. I have done psychedelic mushrooms, and yeah, mushrooms are powerful. I would say that I intend to try to do them no more than once or twice a year at most, because you can get to a weird place if you do shrooms too often. But shrooms, I think, are safer than LSD. LSD is terrible, okay? And what else? Oh, yeah, and also I use marijuana. But that's pretty much all my fucking drugs. No cocaine, no crystal meth. I know I have a bucket list, or my fuck it list, that, you know, from a previous podcast, son of a bitch. On my fuck it list is I want to do some fucking cocaine, some yayo. If it's the last day of the world, I don't know, maybe Jesus wouldn't be happy. Maybe he'd prefer I spend it praying, but maybe I want to do cocaine with a hooker as Morbos hits the earth. What is the moral of this story? Well, there really is only one valid point to be made here, and that is LSD sucks. Okay, if anyone ever tells you that LSD is a fun drug and that it'll help you for some reason, I would avoid it. If someone tells you you should microdose it, listen, technically speaking, when you're taking Prozac or any of these other fucking, you know, antidepressants, you're kind of basically doing time-released LSD. Oh shit, no one told you that. LSD mimics serotonin. So serotonin is a neural transmitter, and serotonin as a neurotransmitter, helps with things like a sense of peacefulness, a sense of pleasure. Dopamine is sometimes considered the strong pleasure neurotransmitter, but you can think of serotonin as the neurotransmitter that sort of brings peace of mind, harmony, general sense of, yeah, everything's okay. LSD chemically looks almost exactly like serotonin, almost, but it's not serotonin. And when it floods the brain, it fills in essentially the spot on the neuron itself, the spot where the serotonin would go. Essentially, if you think of it like a lock and a key, LSD is like putting a key into the lock and then breaking the key off. And until it wears off, it essentially stays there and it continuously triggers. It continuously antagonizes the serotonergic parts of the brain. That's the basic theory. But here's the deal, folks. I don't care if you're microdosing or taking Prozac or getting your shit made by some brown blotter lab rat off the streets. LSD is dangerous as fuck. If you're a kid, you should never take it. If you're an adult, you should never take it. If you're a human being, you should never take it. Okay, I know that sounds hypocritical because I did LSD. I will never do it again. I can imagine smoking cigarettes, folks. I can imagine smoking cigs, okay? I can imagine getting a pack of American Spirit and lighting them up. But I cannot imagine doing LSD ever again. It put me into one of the darkest places I'd ever been, and it wasn't depression. And it wasn't even technically rage. It was madness. It was crazy. And so, and I will tell you, I have tried antidepressants before. One of the things I will tell you is that some of my experiences with antidepressants and some of my experiences with acid, almost the same. Almost exactly the same. And then someone said, well, Dan, you just have to give your dosages right on your fucking acid, excuse me, your antidepressant. Well, that might be true, and the same thing applies to the fucking people microdosing LSD. They just need to get their dosage right. And then they'll be fine. And then they won't see the fucking crazy shit, the fucking pimps chasing their hookers up the street with dogs on chains. They wouldn't see that, no. They'd see happy, shiny shit. They'd see the friendly pimp saying, hello, hello, buddy. Look at my fucking hookers, they're on sale. $55.95. So yeah, that's a weird story, and I hope you'll forgive me because I've mentioned it before. Maybe it's because I feel a great deal of guilt about having done it. Not just what I did as a result, but just the act itself was so stupid and so pointless. How can a middle-aged man do LSD? The only way you should ever do LSD as a middle-aged man if somebody gives it to you without you knowing it, yeah. Or as an antidepressant. This is the Little Saigon Report. And as you well know, we are listener-funded, but we do not make you pay money to listen. In fact, if all you want to do is recommend the Little Saigon Report to all your friends and family, if all you want to do this Thanksgiving is say, there's this crazy dude in Little Saigon, Seattle, he's gone mad. If all you want to do is do that, folks, that's helpful as fuck. But if you can do more, which means if you have money, if you have enough money that you've taken care of everything you need to take care of for yourself, that means the food, the water, the shelter, the stuff you need to survive. If you've taken care of yourself and the people you love, and you still have a few extra bucks left over, And you enjoy the fucking Little Saigon Report. Who doesn't, right? It's filled with joy and peace and fucking happiness bullshit. Who doesn't love the Little Saigon Report? It's got all kinds of positive shit. So yeah, if you like it, click on the link to Venmo included in the description of this podcast, or click on the link to Venmo in the, you know, on my homepage of SoundCloud in the right panel. I don't know what it looks like on your app, your fucking iPhone app. Guess what? I don't have a smartphone. I have a flip phone, you fuck. And for November the 23rd, I can't believe it. November the 23rd? November the 23rd, 2019, almost noon, high noon. Yeah, high noon in Little Saigon. For this November the 23rd, 2019, I want you all to have a great night, great day, great afternoon. And please, don't do acid.